Be there. Don't be square. All right. A lot of people having Christmas parties tonight. A lot of people. So you're going to be in and out of your car, in and out of your Uber. Hey, radio.com app. Hit us up. You can also call in. You want to be a part of the show? It's interactive. I was a caller. That's how I got put on by my man, Damon Bruce. If you call and get in line at 888-957-9570, we will get to you quickly. I promise that. Stay in line. You get in at the end of one segment, you'll get in at the next one. And at 8:30, we're going to talk 49ers. We're going to have Kyle Madsen, the managing editor at The Niners Wire. And Kyle is very funny. He's one of those, I guess he'd be a satire type of an account on Twitter. He does a ton of just really brilliant tweets. And I know that kind of sounds silly to say over the radio, but the guy, he's got the comedic bug in him, and he's very good. And then we're going to have Jason Cole. Everybody knows Jason Cole, the editor-in-chief of Fansided.com. He is going to join us at 9:30. We're going to do Food with Butcher, Christmas edition, because my man Jordan Bell, the one who Guru wanted to go one-on-one with, he had a situation when it comes to food service and tipping. And you know I'm passionate about that. So we're definitely going to do Food with Butcher right before Christmas at about 10:30. But let's dig in on baseball, because we got Warriors. I know we got the Lakers coming in on Christmas. We got the Niners and the Bears on Sunday. We got this Raiders situation with the stadium. But let's start with the hated L.A. Dodgers. And, you know, when I was growing up, I rooted for the Giants, the San Francisco Giants. And then I rooted for whoever was playing against the Dodgers, because that's how much I hated the Dodgers. And one of the guys that I absolutely appreciate, I appreciate what he brings to the game, is Yasiel Puig. And you could say all you want about Yasiel Puig being a dog. Oh, he's a jerk. He does ridiculous things in the batter's box. I find him hilarious. And I think that he's one of the very few legitimate villains in baseball. And there's not enough villains in sports these days. He totally embraces the WWE over-the-top bad guy rep. I mean, that is who Yasiel Puig is. When he gets into the batter's box, you groove one down the middle, he hits it foul a mile, and he's like licking his bat, thinking he should have hit a yak. When he's stretching it out from first to third, and he literally flips the helmet off and the tongue is sticking out. I mean, nothing is more exciting than seeing Yasiel Puig play baseball. And I love that he gets under Madison Bumgarner's skin. I'm not going to lie, guys. I love Bumgarner. I really do. But you can't be a great hero, Madison Bumgarner, the Paul Bunyan, without a foe. You got to have a villain to go up against. And Yasiel Puig, in that Dodger blue, in those all whites, was just a great villain. And tonight, Andrew Friedman, he sent him and Alex Wood and Matt Kemp, the guy who drank from the Fountain of Youth this year, to the Cincinnati Reds, one of the oldest ball clubs in all of baseball. One of the original old-time clubs. And in return, basically what they're going to get is Homer Bailey, who is basically an expiring contract that they're going to eat the money on. But they also get a couple of prospects that no one's ever heard of, so why even bring their name up? Because you've never heard of them, and nor have I. But it looks like the Dodgers are trying to put themselves in position for, wait for it, Bryce Harper. And I'm telling you guys right now, if the Dodgers land Bryce Harper, it's going to be a cold winter for Giants fans. It is going to be a cold, cold winter. If Bryce Harper lands with the Dodgers, he will sell more jerseys. He will sell more jerseys in LA than any other player who's ever played for the Dodgers. What were you going to say, Gabe?
I don't know about you, but there's just uniforms in sports that just bring a taste to your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you imagine the Yankee pinstripes.
Okay.
And you're like, you know, it's just something that little that sits in the back of your throat a little bit.
Yeah. Like a sour taste.
I picture those flowing locks of Bryce Harper coming out from underneath the LA blue cap.
Oh, my God. Why are you doing this to me?
It's hurting me, and I had to hurt you a little bit because it's a lot of suffering that I'm thinking, just imagining it at this point
in
time.
Well, I'm hoping, this is what I'm truly hoping. I'm hoping that the Dodgers do not land Bryce Harper for obvious reasons, okay? I hope they go after A.J. Pollock. And I like A.J. Pollock. He's a really good player, good center fielder. The guy can run, but he's always hurt. He's always hurt. He, in many ways, is the outfield version of Brandon Belt. He was on pace for 30 home runs this year, and then he twisted his pinky. You know, the guy can play. But I look at this Dodgers situation, and Farhan was down there, the new Giants GM. He was down in L.A., and they've just assembled an absolute juggernaut. I mean, guys, look at their outfield. Taylor, who can also play some infield. I think he played second base in the World Series. They've got Jock Peterson coming off the bench. They traded Matt Kemp. And I got in a huge argument with people on Twitter. Yes, I don't know why I'm arguing with people on Twitter last summer about Matt Kemp. I said, if Matt Kemp had come to the Giants, this was at the time, I said he'd be their best outfielder. He can't move. He can't hit. The dude batted like 325 almost the entire year this year, hit 20-something jacks, had 80-something. He had a monster season. Monster season. And I just, as a fan of the rivalry, Dodgers-Giants, Bumgarner, Yasiel Puig, I'm sad he's gone, to be honest with you. And it's not just the Bryce Harper thing. There's no doubt. I don't want them to get Bryce by any means, but I wish they could have kept Yasiel Puig. Even if they were going to add Bryce Harper, I wish they would have been able to keep Yasiel Puig because I love what he brings to the rivalry. Major League Baseball needs more villains. They need more people who evoke emotion, right? When you look at the NBA, there's so many different players. LeBron James, he's a lightning rod. You love him or you hate him. Steph Curry. There's a lot of people outside of the bubble of the Bay Area that can't stand Steph. They think he's a hot dog. They think he's disingenuous and think he can't be that perfect. He can't be that perfect. Why is he bringing his daughter Riley up onto the stage? What's he doing? Why is his wife selling pots and pans at Target? I have to admit, when I saw Aisha's picture on pots and pans at Target, I told Kolsky, I'm out on Aisha. Sorry, I love Steph. I'm not buying a pot or pan with Aisha Curry's face on it. Am I tripping?
No, you're not tripping. Oh, I actually got a good one for you, though.
Okay.
So, Riley, who you just mentioned.
Uh-huh.
I got, again, I'm going to pull a Chris Broussard on you.
Okay.
Anonymous sources. Aisha was introducing herself to her fifth grade class. Uh-huh. She's in fifth grade now. Or, sorry, Riley was.
Okay.
And Riley goes, I'm Riley. I think you know who I am.
Ooh, she dropped one of those.
She dropped it.
See, I want to do that to the police one day when I get pulled over speeding or blowing a stop sign. Not that I do that. Like, do you know who I am? No, I couldn't do that.
I'm sure you're the best driver ever. I look at you and I'm just like, this guy knows how to operate a motor vehicle. I'm sure you never speed or anything.
My wife is in constant, like, arms stretched out over my chest, like, cringing while I drive the entire time. I've actually advocated for her to just have a cocktail before we leave, take a nice nap, sit the seat back, especially when we're going up to the restroom. Why are you speeding? I'm going 77. Relax. But back to this Dodger situation, because they're just absolutely loaded. They're freaking loaded. You get rid of Matt Kemp, you get rid of Yasiel Puig, and now you're going to bring in what it looks like, either AJ Pollock or Bryce Harper to an already loaded roster. I mean, look, oh my, let's just look at their rotation.
A roster that was decimated by injuries, and then they bring in Max Muncy, who nobody has ever heard of
before. The A's fans have.
Barely.
I know.
The A's fans couldn't have cared less that he was gone, and all of a sudden he's popping, he ends up in the home run derby. Max Muncy was one of the best stories of last season.
And what about Corey Seager? Has Tommy John? Oh, and you know what? We have enough prospects to go get a rental in Manny Machado, who's the second best free agent since A-Rod. If Bryce Harper's the best free agent since A-Rod, because that's what I believe him to be, he's the best free agent since A-Rod in baseball, I would say Manny Machado's probably number two. Is he a knucklehead? Does he do dumb things? No doubt. But the talent is undeniable. Real quick, this rotation for the Dodgers, they got Clayton Kershaw, my guy Walker Buehler, who is an absolute freak, stud. You know what Roxy Bernstein comped him? I said Greinke. He's a bigger Greinke. He said, no, he reminds me more of Verlander. That's how good this guy is. And he threw an absolute gem in the World Series. Just flip it on. He was brilliant. And then they got Ryu, who's just a giant killer, the big lefty. Maeda, who's still very solid. Rich Hill. They're all coming back. They got Stripling. They got Arias, the young kid who come out, you know, the single-digit number with the glasses. Total Dodger dweeb. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. And then their outfield, Jock Peterson and Bellinger, my favorite player out there. Kiki Hernandez, Chris Taylor, Tolles. I mean, the Dodgers are loaded. And if they get Bryce Harper, It's situation critical for the Giants when it comes to season ticket sales. And it's going to be a cold winter. On the other side, though, I want to get into the Warriors. We're definitely going to talk Raiders. We're going to talk 49ers. In about 1 hour, we'll get a Niner conversation going. We're going to talk about where the Raiders maybe will play next season. But on the other side, let's dig in on the Warriors' woes. Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, the team's struggling. They're not passing the ball. We got Anthony Slater at the bottom of the hour. Stay tuned. The Butcher Shop.
Now back to the Butcher Shop on 95.7 The Game. Here's Joe Shasky.
What's up, San Francisco? We got Christmas just a couple days away. 49er talking about 45 minutes. We're definitely going to touch on the Raiders playing at AT&T Park. Because I got some big-time thoughts about the Raiders playing in San Francisco again. And that's going to be about an hour and a half. But in 45 minutes, 49er talk is coming. All right, and we're definitely going to get into some Christmas Ask Your Butcher when it comes to food topics. But let's dig in on the Warriors. Anthony Slater going to meet us in about 10 minutes. So hold tight. Anthony Slater of The Athletic. I mean, did you guys see the Warrior game the other night? I'm watching that game, and I'm listening to the broadcast, and it's, oh, we're just having a horrible shooting night. I'm so sick of the excuses. Not just the broadcast. I'm not ripping the broadcast. Just the fan base in general. The narratives that are surrounding this team. Yes, Klay Thompson is in a shooting slump. I understand there's reason to be a little bit worried. I get that. But for me, I'm more worried about Draymond. And the reason I'm more worried about Draymond is because that shoulder. And I've brought this up many, many, many times. And I feel like the shoulder is not only hampering him physically, but it's also hampering him emotionally and psychologically because it's not allowing him to take the open shots. One of the Don Nelson credos to good basketball is a shot created is a shot that must be taken. And I agree with that because when you work a good play, you get good spacing, the ball gets kicked to somebody and they're wide open and they don't take the shot, it doesn't force the defense to stretch itself out. And so what they do is they stay home. And then you don't take that shot, you pass off to someone else, and they just clamp that guy. And I see it time and time again now, and this has been a recurring theme for Draymond. It's been a slow drip when it comes to his production. The shoulder. And he's been battling the shoulder for about 2 years now. And last year, I said all throughout the year, something's not right, man. When you're battling guys 50, 60, 70 pounds heavier than you at the rim, you're going to have some wear and tear. And in baseball, in football, in other sports, when you hurt the shoulder, you're out for a significant amount of time. And there is any number of very nuanced surgeries that you need to have, plus that rehab. You need that time off. And Draymond always had a flat trajectory on the three-point ball. I think we would all agree. He didn't shoot it with that beautiful arc, nor did he have the form of Steph or Klay. He never did. But he was so willing to take that three-point shot, and that's what made that 73-win team so special, especially when they got off to that 28-1 start. Draymond was hitting threes. Now, was he taking them, you know, as many as Steph and Klay? No, he wasn't. But he was taking them at the appropriate time with the proper spacing. And over the last few months, heading back into last year around this time, when that shoulder first started to ail him, I've noticed that Draymond is more reluctant to take that open three. And what that's done has caused them to boggle down in the half court. Now, part of the other shooting woes, you know, Steph's missed a lot of games in the last couple years, specifically early on. And more has been asked of Klay Thompson to put on his plate. And we know when there's not Steph out there, the defense can now focus on Klay more. And that totally changes his effectiveness, the type of open shots that he's going to get. And I also think that Klay, because he has gotten better putting the ball on the floor, the ball seems to find him more often, right? And he seems to be more of a willing playmaker. So he's taking more off-balance shots, more shots that aren't just catch and shoot. I'd be very curious to see how many dribbles he's had the last couple of months in comparison to 2 or 3 years ago. And we all know he had like 7 dribbles and 65 points that one day. But he's been putting the ball on the floor a lot more. And actually, I think his playmaking has been very underrated. I'm not really worried about Klay Thompson. I'm really not. And I'm not necessarily worried about Draymond Green because I don't think they need him to be jacking up threes all the time. He just needs to be willing to take those shots when they present themselves, the 3 to 4 times in a game. Otherwise, the defenses are going to sag off. They're going to stay in the lane. They're going to clog up that mid-range. They're going to clutch and grab Steph, especially off those blind screens, because once Dre hits an open three at the top of the key, it forces his defender out of the key, out of the mid-range section, and that's just another guy that's not going to clutch and grab and get in the way on a screen for Steph, for Klay, and for Durant. So you're unclogging the offense. And then if that guy comes out hard enough, we all know Dre loves to put it on the floor. And now you're really getting that defense off balance. You're stretching them out, and you're forcing them to pick and choose. Am I going to give him the three ball, or am I going to come pressing out so that he can maybe fly by me and set up someone else?
That's what I miss most about Draymond this year with everything that's been going on. Not so much the threes, is the drives.
I agree with you.
Because you remember how that would light up Oracle anytime, especially coming from a player of his stature, which you touched upon. Mm-hmm. If he goes to the rack, he gets the contact, he gets an and one, he hits his little pose and stands on baseline, gets everybody going. I can't think of a single time that's happened this year.
Well, and if you notice, I mean, just watch. He passes a lot with the left hand. Have you guys noticed that this year? And I like it.
And his passing has been less accurate as a result. The turnovers have gone up.
Totally agree. And maybe it's something that I've come to notice, and maybe I'm tripping. Maybe I'm just looking at something and I'm trying to, you know, pontificate on something that's really not there. But I really truly feel like that shoulder never got the time to properly heal. And Gabe, you and I were talking about it in the green room. I was saying, you know, Dre's played a lot of basketball with not a lot of rest. And I brought this up when we're talking about Andrew Luck. When he hurt his shoulder, he was out for almost an entire year. When a baseball pitcher, and I know it's rotator cuff surgery, and there's Tommy Johns, there's lots of different types of shoulder and arm injuries. But did Dre ever truly take enough time off to really allow that shoulder to rehabilitate itself? I don't think he has.
Well, what's the most prominent shoulder injury in the world of sports right now?
Rotator cuff, right?
I just mean, no, to a person.
Oh, Tommy John?
No,
what do you think?
Like an individual athlete.
I don't know. You tell me.
Markel Fultz. The shoulder, huge problem there.
That's a good call. I didn't even put two and two together.
And
good
what's
call.
Happening with that is that he keeps coming back too soon. That's what everybody says, if it's not, you know, entirely psychological or whatever.
But don't you think it's a combination of both?
Yes, I do. But what I'm saying to your point is when it's people like Luck and it's other people in other sports with shoulder injuries, they're on the shelf.
Yes.
They're not doing anything. They're not moving.
Exactly.
They're not picking up the TV remote. They're not doing a gosh darn thing.
Yep.
And you see it with Markel Fultz now, who's completely out of basketball activities, which is something that probably should have happened a long time ago. And Draymond playing with Team USA, doing all this stuff. Not even close to any kind of rehab period.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's where I get concerned. And I love Dre. I mean, he is the tone setter on defense, on offense. When he rips a rebound after playing great post defense on somebody, rips a rebound and then pushes it up court to facilitate and set up the open spacing, that's when the Warriors are at their best. Pace and space, baby. But you can't have pace and space when it's really difficult for you to lift your arm up above your shoulder. And I just... Again, I want you to watch the games. They got, who do they got? They got the Clippers, Dallas Mavericks, I think Mavericks, then Clippers, then Lakers, correct?
Correct.
Right? Keep an eye on the right shoulder for Draymond Green. And it's not something that, he's not going to get more healthy throughout the season. Like, that's the thing. Like, we're talking about rest. If he's going to get that shoulder up and ready to go, he needs months of rest and rehabilitation. I want to know what type of cleanup he really had in the offseason. And I mean, what can you really do outside of resting it to allow that shoulder to get back to be 100%? He's never going to have a great shot like that. I'm not saying all of a sudden he's going to start shooting like Larry Bird. No, I'm just saying that it's so bad. It's now seeped into him psychologically, and he's unwilling to take those shots.
No, you think about it. The payday is coming up. We know how soon we're going to have to make a decision on if this is a max contract player at this stage in his career. And now got the toe injuries, got the feet problems, which has always been a killer for anybody who's going to play in the low post.
Absolutely.
Combined with this shoulder thing that we don't know the depth of, it's a very legitimate question about, yeah. You have to look at every single facet of this man before you open up the checkbook.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm going to go through the Chilton Auto Body text line before we get Anthony Slater joining us any minute now. From the 510, what up, Butcher Boy? What's up, guys? I'm absolutely terrified about Clay. Even though he has one of the fastest releases and holds the ball the least, if you watch him, it's like he's in a rush to get every shot off. He's not getting set and squaring up to the hoop. That is one thing that he does a tremendous job of in years past, squaring up his body to the hoop. I teach lots of kids, every time you receive a pass, you should turn your body, square up to the hoop so you're a threat. You can open up, see the court, you're even looking at the rim, squared up to the backboard. That's proper fundamentals on receiving a pass so that you can get rid of it quickly and up and over a defender. One thing Clay has had a more difficult time doing this year, squaring up. And then because he's not squared up, he's taken really awkward off-balance shots. But he's really good at those off-balance. Some of those ones where he pump fakes and then fades away. It's incredible how he has the strength in the lower body. He's got tree trunk legs to get those off. But I'm not as worried. We got him? We got him, boys? All right. Anthony Slater of The Athletic. He covers the Warriors. He's done a fantastic job. He was covering them. You were covering, the Oklahoma City Thunder? But you're a NorCal guy, correct?
Yeah, I'm North Bay, Roner Park, if you know where that
is. Oh, come on. I know exactly where that is. It's 707, baby.
Yeah.
I love it, Anthony. Thank you for joining us. I know... you've been on this Warrior grind for quite some time. I really enjoy your videos and your five observations in The Athletic all the time. And, I saw a tweet that you posted, and it was something that I don't know if it's something or it's nothing, but you said that the Warriors and their passes per game, they're down about 14 or so passes per game. Why do you think that's an important statistic, and what do you make of them being down in passes?
Well, 300 was a number. When Steve Kerr arrived, remember he arrived to a Mark Jackson offense that was kind of ancient, and it was, post-ups for Klay Thompson, and they couldn't really unlock Curry and Klay as much as they should have. So he implemented an offense that at the core of it was they wanted 300 passes per game. It's something, those crazy cameras and the rafters track. Mm-hmm. They actually track how many passes you make. And their target was always 300. And really in the last, four or so years, especially before KD got here, they would be, mid 300s. Last year they were 322, which is a good number. But they're down around 309, which is still solid. It's fourth in the league. He likes looking at that number. Steve likes looking at that number because that's kind of what they pride themselves on, that fluid ball movement, Steph's movement off the ball, back cuts. Swing passes on the perimeter. The other day in Utah, they had 266, which is a really bad number for them. That's just a number they always reference because they feel like the passes per game tell them what type of offense they're running. Are they a little too ISO heavy like they were against Utah? Or if they're up in the 320 range, they feel like they had a good night.
I like that. Anthony Slater covers the Warriors for The Athletic. Yeah, you brought up Mark Jackson era. It was just hold the ball, ISO, post-ups. It was ugly to watch, really ugly to watch. We've been talking and kind of kicking around the Klay Thompson shooting slump. And I've been bringing up the Draymond Green shoulder. And before we get on to Klay, I'm curious – am I just, hyper-analyzing Draymond Green? Because I feel like that shoulder's been bothering him for a couple of years, and I feel like it's seeped into him a little psychologically, and he's just not taking that three-point shot. And I'm of the nature of the Don Nelson crew. A shot created is a shot you got to just pull the trigger on to force that defense out. Where are you with Draymond's health and him not taking those three-pointers?
Well, it's interesting because the shoulder was definitely a huge issue last year. I don't know if you remember, but it happened in game 7. Mm-hmm. He was going up for a shot block. I think it was against the Pistons at home. JaVale McGee undercut him. He fell really awkwardly on the shoulder, missed a few games because of it. And really all last season, you talk to him after shoot around, and he's sitting there getting his whole shoulder, get an ice pack kind of wrapped around it. And it was always bothering him. But he came back from this offseason, he said it was fine, and I honestly haven't seen him ice his shoulder once. This year, it's been the toe, it's been the knee. He still looks very beat up after games and after practices. It's just not his shoulder anymore. Maybe the struggles he had last year bled into this year some. He clearly does not have confidence in the shot. I'm not sure it is a shoulder thing anymore. I just think it's a brick thing. He just keeps missing. But the reality is, if you look at his career log, the outlier is that 73-win season. He shot 39% that year. He made over 100 threes. And you thought, if you know, in that season, you thought, wow, this is a guy that's on the rise as a shooter. He had gone from like 20% to 30% in year two. To you know, it was climbing. It was climbing. But ever since then, it's gone down and down again. Now he's at, what, 20% right now?
Yeah.
He's only made 7 threes all season. He's only made 1 since the start of November. What you said is correct, though. They need him to shoot because they can't have defenders like Rudy Gobert the other night that's literally standing back at the paint while Draymond has it at the top of the key. Because then you're playing 4-on-5. And then what he does well, which is play make, that's not there because the passing lane's not there because, you know, the defenders are sitting in the passing lane telling him, hey, be a scorer, be a shooter, and he's not doing it. So it's a problem. He has to correct by being aggressive, but at the same time, opposing teams are going to let him shoot it if he's going to hit it at a 20% clip.
That's a great point. Anthony Slater, I mean, that's phenomenal breakdown. Anthony Slater of the Athletic covers the Warriors. Now let's get to Klay Thompson. Is this just a blip in the radar, this little slump? Is it shot selection? I mean, what do you make of Klay Thompson's early season struggles?
Well, it's shot selection, but I mean, look, he's never been, exactly the most efficient, you know, shot selector in his career. It's just gotten a lot worse this year. And, you know, I think a large amount of it is when Steph and Draymond went out at the same time, which I'm not sure they've ever both been out for an extended stretch like they were. That put pressure on Klay Thompson that he hasn't had really in his career. He's always, you know, either had Steph out there or Draymond as a playmaker. And I think he had to go create shots. It was him and KD for that like 10-game stretch where it was like, go find offense. And I think it may have like dragged him into this place where he's still kind of struggling to get out of where he's dribbling more than he's used to. He's like, you know, trying to, you know, find shots. He's taking contested shots. He's taking early in the clock fadeaways from the baseline. He's just, I'd say maybe taking about 6 junk shots per game. And that's up from, I don't know, maybe we'll say 3 or 4 in past years that were like heat checks that you were okay with. Now it's at the point, it's like, it seems like he's going a little overboard. They're trying to drag him out of that. I think Steph's, reintegrated in the lineup, Draymond's. It'll probably get him out of it somewhat, but you know, it's been an issue, especially with how inefficient he's been. He's just not shooting it well. And that's not even just the bad shot. I think I saw a number where he was like, you know, right around 30% on open threes this year, which is kind of crazy. It just tells you kind of just how out of rhythm he is.
Do you think he'll be an all-star this year?
No, I'd have to like take a deeper look at the West guards. You got guys on the rise, obviously, like, De'Aaron Fox, who might be pushing them, and new blood like that. But, you know, Jimmy Butler goes to the Eastern Conference. Kawhi Leonard goes to the Eastern Conference. So that may, you know, it's always very competitive in the West, but it's not as competitive in years past. So I think he's got a shot, a way better shot than Draymond does. But he's going to have to bring those numbers up because he was always at the fringe of that, right around with, like, I know Mike Conley's really pushing, trying to get his first All-Star nod. So I would say if his percentages are still right around where they are right now, when we're talking about it more in like, you know, mid-January, late January, I would say no.
Wow. Anthony Slater of The Athletic covers the Warriors. You're doing a great job, honestly. I mean that very sincerely. I love listening to your passion. You do a great job writing. I was reading your article and you're talking about the second unit and the lack of centers. Last year, this team had, it seemed like 50 centers, and this year it seems like they don't have any healthy bodies to play center. What can they do during the season? I mean, is a trade with like a Jacob Evans type or maybe a draft pick, is that even an option given their financial situation, or are they just going to have to wait this thing out and see if anyone gets bought out?
Well, it's all about Cousins, really. That's why they really kind of want to see Cousins, you know, what he is, and the clock's kind of starting to tick on DeMarcus. I think probably he'll debut sometime in January, but they need to know what Cousins are getting. Because if they're getting a really good DeMarcus Cousins that can play 26 minutes a night, they're fine at the center spot. He's an unbelievable player. It'll be a kind of a strange adjustment to try to mold together the Warrior style with, you know, a high usage DeMarcus Cousins, but that's a good problem to have. Especially with Kevon Looney, who I think has established himself as a good NBA rotation player. He'll get the backup minutes. That pushes Jordan Bell out of the rotation, which I think at this point they'd prefer with the way Bell's kind of struggling. Mm-hmm. And they're fine at the center spot. But if Cousins doesn't fit well, if it's just kind of, maybe he's rusty because of the Achilles, they will probably start to look around. I'm not sure any good trades are available. They're going to want to keep their first-round pick. Jacob Evans at this point isn't really, you know, that great of a trade chip, just because he hasn't shown anything in the league. I think Jordan Bell would probably be a better trade chip. But they have the 15th roster spot open. The guy I know they're at least, you know, monitoring is the Robin Lopez situation in Chicago. They don't want to trade for him. His contract's too much. But if he gets bought out, and I could definitely see him getting bought out if Chicago can't find a home for his big contract by March, then I could see him filling that 15th spot.
Love it. Anthony Slater of The Athletic. You saw the Boogie Kevin Durant thing. I'm sure you were at the were you at the gym today?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I'm doing a story on DeMarcus, kind of a little bit of what I was talking about. And I'm waiting for him off to the side. He dunks on KD, comes over, and we sat and talked for probably about 10 minutes. The story, I think, is going to post Monday. But it'll have a little bit of color in that because he literally walked right over after dunking on him, sat down, and I kind of chatted with him a little bit about the dunk.
I love that. So, I mean, because I'm going to be honest with you, Anthony. I watch everything on the Twitter feed. I talk to all the guys here that are always out at the arena. And I just, I don't know. I'm watching the videos of Boogie, not today's, but the other ones, and I'm going, he doesn't look that athletic. He looks kind of big, and I know he's a big boy to begin with, but I'm worried about his conditioning and how hard he can go with that particular injury that he's trying to come back from. I mean, what's the sense that you get? I mean, do you really think that he can hit the ground running and play, you know, in back-to-backs, for example, even if it's only 15 or 20 minutes?
Well, I think they're going to ease him in. I think it's gone slower than both sides expected, the Warriors and Cousins. And really, like, I thought his rehab seemed to be going either on track or a little bit ahead of schedule all the way up until, like, camp and into, like, the last month. But these later stages, I think he's been frustrated. I talked to him a little bit about it today, but he just gets really sore. Like, you know, you haven't played basketball for 10 months, and then you go and you do these heavy workouts. And he's never a guy that's been, you know, had anything near this type of injury. So this is a new process for him. He just said it was, there's some days where his feet feel like cement blocks, his legs just can barely move out there. And I think those are kind of the videos you're seeing. And he's never been, you know, he's never been a high flyer. He dunked on KD today, but it's still like, it's such a, like a below the rim type dunk that he does. So he's never going to, it's not like he's trying to get back to like Jordan Bell level, like but you know, I think it's gone slower than they wanted in these later stages. I think he's feeling better. I think by far the best sign I've seen was what happened today. He dunked, and he was clearly pretty joyful after that he did it. And I think he's getting there. But to answer your original kind of question, I think they'll probably ease him back in with a 15-minute night in game one and maybe sit him in a back-to-back at least one of the nights and kind of try to work him up to 20-something minutes per game. But what they don't want to do is drop him right now into like a struggle where he's really targeted and they're playing up and down and he's getting tired and he's getting frustrated because you don't want to lose him. They're only going to have him for a few months, but they don't want to, you know, if he gets frustrated with his play, they could maybe lose him right away mentally.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Anthony Slater covers the Warriors for The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter, Anthony V. Slater. Anthony, before you get out of here, you said you grew up in Rohnert Park. I want to know, what is your Christmas dinner? What is your primary Christmas dinner love? Like, what do you got to have? Prime rib? Is it Dungeness crab? What is it that you got to have for Christmas for it to be Christmas dinner?
Oh, probably like good mashed potatoes, I'd say. I'm not really a big meat eater, so like honestly, I'll probably just get some good salmon or something, but I do like mashed potatoes.
Nice. I like it. All right. Well, hey, look, enjoy a big Laker game. I wanted to ask you about that, but we're running out of time. I really appreciate you coming on. Merry Christmas to you and your family, and let's catch up soon. All right, buddy?
All right. Appreciate it.
Definitely. Anthony Slater covers the Warriors for The Athletic. Again, follow him, Anthony V. Slater. He puts out great columns after every single game, 5 observations about what happened in that particular game, maybe what it's, you know, the common thread throughout the season. On the other side, though, we're going to continue this Draymond, Clay, and Boogie talk here at the Butcher Shop, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the Butcher Shop on 95.7 The Game. Here's Joe Shasky.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Joe Shasky, Butcher Shop, 888-957-9570. Get in line. Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795. Nothing like nicotine on a Friday night. Going out with your buddies, having a nice glass of who knows what, adult beverages. It's Christmas. Most people have a couple of days off leading into this weekend. I'm curious, though, and we're going to talk 49ers very shortly, about 20 minutes. We're going to talk 49ers. We're going to dig in deep on the 49ers. You know who's 49ers?
The San Francisco 49ers!
Oh, yeah, we're going there, baby. We're going back to the 80s VHS tapes. But I'm getting a lot of text on the Chilton Auto Body text line about what game This is from the 408. What game is Boogie going to make his Golden State Warrior debut? And I should have asked Anthony Slater. He had said late January. I'm looking at the schedule. I'm looking at the schedule, guys. And if I had it my way, I would say he doesn't make his return in January. I don't want him pushing it back. I want him to really make sure he's fully healthy. He's the Achilles being that big, and you know, you haven't probably had much cardio. He needs to really get his feet and his lungs underneath him. I would like him to make his start. I'm looking at 2-2 February 2nd against the Lakers. And that would give him the Laker game, the Spur game, the Suns game, the Heat game, then the Jazz, Warriors versus the Blazers, all to set up the 2-21 February 21st Kings game. Because you know he wants to be ready for that third Kings game. He's not going to be ready probably for the January 5th Kings game. That would give him a half a dozen games to kind of get acclimated, get his feet underneath him.
Well, that's what, like, everybody's talking big about the one-on-one clip and the dunk. As they should. It's interesting. It's good to look at.
Like the Richard Sherman getting blown by Marquise Goodwin in spring in a training camp.
But the people who are really coming at it like, oh, he's ready to go. Let's put him on the court. Are you watching that video? Are you actually seeing it? This is the most lead-footed dunk I've seen in my entire life. And that's no knock on him. You know, he's working his way back.
Of course.
But my God, he looks like he's moving through water out there.
That's a good one. You're exactly right. And if it was me, I would slow play this. I mean, if we're going to be cautious on all Iguodala, Iguodala stubs his toe, he's out a month. You know, Sean Livingston sneezes too hard, he's out 2 weeks. Like, let's pace ourselves on Boogie. And, you know, if we're really, I'm going to say this. Everybody just thinks it's a foregone conclusion. Boogie is not going to take, 20% over what he would be making now in another one-year deal, right? Because he took the minimum. He took that minimum salary. If I'm the Warriors, I slow play this as much as I possibly can, with the hope that he has to take another one-year deal because he hasn't proven enough. And then that sets you up to extend him down the line. Has anyone considered that? And I'm not saying that, like, I'm sadistically like the emperor. I'm in control of all things. You know, like Star Wars is one of my favorite movies. So I'm thinking about the emperor. I wanted you to be here, Luke. Like, that's how I would think, like, Bob Myers and Joe Lacob are going to talk to Boogie. No, that's not exactly what I think. But my point being is that, doesn't it help all parties if they slow play this? It's only going to help Boogie. If he goes out there and hurts himself, he's cost himself another year and hundreds of millions of dollars. Now he's coming off multiple injuries with bad attitudes and things like that, and he couldn't make it work here? That's what everyone's going to say. Where if I'm the Warriors and I slow play this and I tell him, hey, dude, this is for your own good, whatever money he thinks he's losing, he can make it back. And if you look, did you guys see that Macaulay Culkin commercial? Did you see that reboot? Did you see who the cutout was? Was it LeBron? No, because back in the day when Macaulay Culkin had that little cutout and it was going around on the choo-choo train track to pretend to Marv and the other Wet Bandit that, you know, someone was home and they were partying, it was a Michael Jordan cutout. You guys remember those big, tall cutouts that you used to have in your bedroom? Now it's like, what are those wall things that the kids have?
Fat heads.
Fat heads, right? Now the kids got the fat heads. Well, back in the day, we had the cutouts, right? I had a big John Wayne one. It was a beer one, actually, when I was a kid. That shows you how old school I am. But it was Kevin Durant. And you know why it was Kevin Durant? Because he is linked up with Silicon Valley. Did you watch the playoffs? Who was the king of YouTube TV? It wasn't LeBron. It was Kevin Durant. And so I know making money on the court is a very important thing, but making money off the court is just as important to a guy when you get to the stratosphere of where DeMarcus is, in my opinion. Now, the video that came out today on the gram, on Twitter, I can't take any stock out of that, guys. He doesn't have to get back down the court. You saw once Kevin Durant hit a bucket, they stopped for a second. I mean, what's it going to be like when we have frenetic pacing and the ball is staying in bounds and there's no foul calls and you have like 45 to a minute and a half worth of back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and he has to cut and stop and play defense and rotate and switch. it's just different. And when you have bodies colliding into you, especially in the low post, I would slow play this thing for both parties. It helps both parties, the Warriors and Boogie Cousins. But again, I am Boogie Travel. Here, hashtag from the 650 on the Chilton Auto Body Tag text line. Boogie Traveled. Hashtag Boogie Traveled. Hashtag yes, I agree. Yes, the Marv Albert. Yes.
You ever hear the Frank Caliendo bit about Marv Albert?
No.
It was because you know who Frank Caliendo is, obviously.
No, I have no idea who Frank Caliendo is.
So he does a killer Marv Albert.
Okay.
And his bit is, you know, yes is the call. What if Marv tried out a bunch of other options before he settled on that? Affirmative.
I wanted him to go with,
hey, it's Tiger.
That should be his calling shot. That would be money if that was what it was. But I gotta say, guys, the Warriors are in a good place. We're tripping on Clay's three-point shooting percentage, and I get that. They are in uncharted waters, not just in the NBA circles, in Bay Area circles. We talk about the Niners dynasty. Oh, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. 1987, before they won it all in 88. Did they get to the NFC Championship game? No, they did not. Okay? No, they did not. Yes, they did in 88, and they ended up going to the Super Bowl and winning it all. They did it in 89. And then in 1990, they lost to the New York Giants in the NFC Championship game. The Warriors have been to the finals four straight years. Four straight years, three titles. That's unprecedented, especially around here. The only thing as close to that is the A's in the 70s winning it 3 years in a row. Now, 88, 89, 90, the A's went to the World Series 3 years in a row. We know that the Giants have won World Series, but they haven't even been to the playoffs in consecutive years since 2001 and 2002. Or I think it was 2002, 2003, excuse me. So, I mean, where the Warriors are at, it's just uncharted territory. Even the Bulls, when the Bulls had Jordan, when they won the first three, Jordan took off. Remember Pippen losing in the playoffs and throwing the chair because the play wasn't designed for him? Anyone remember that? What happened to Kobe and Shaq that fourth time around? I think they lost to the Detroit Pistons. I think they did. That was with Karl Malone and the glove from Oakland. Gary Payton. We're going to talk 49ers in a little bit, but I'm just not worried about Klay Thompson's shooting. I am worried about Draymond Green's shoulder. Anthony Slater said, hey, he's not icing it up a whole lot. I get that. The shot just doesn't look right, and I'm going to be monitoring how he passes the ball. I want to see psychologically, can he start to get that flow back? Because that really opens things up for everyone. That definitely opens things up for everyone. It'll help out Steph Curry. I mean, really, we've had a couple. When they were 10-1, Steph was rolling. I thought he was going to be the MVP. He's come back. He's had a game here, a game there. It has, and by his standards, okay? Not by anyone else's standards, by Steph's standards. I'm still waiting for that 2-3 week stretch where Steph just goes off, right? And we really haven't had too many KD explosions, have we, guys? I don't think we have, you know? What's the best game the Warriors have played collectively all year? Yeah, crickets. Exactly. There's not many of them. Maybe the Bucks game? Maybe. And even then, that was kind of sloppy. So I'm looking forward to these next couple of games. You got Dallas. You got the Clippers. A couple get-right games. I know the Clippers are looking good early on, but they're a mirage. Okay, they're a mirage. And then we get LeBron and the Lakers. And Warrior fans know when LeBron is on the schedule, everything amps up. Everything amps up. For me, I can't wait. Because in my lifetime, the Warriors and Lakers have never been good at the same exact time. Not that the Lakers are in the Warriors' stratosphere, but LeBron is. And you guys watch. I bet you the Warriors themselves turn it up a huge notch. I'm curious to see the turnout at Oracle. I mean, you know it's going to be packed, but is that vibe? You know that vibe. You could feel it through the TV. Right? And who's going to be calling that game? Is Mark Jackson calling that game? Is Van Gundy and Mark Jackson calling that game? Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. All right, well, we're going to talk 49ers here in a little bit. 888-957-9570. But before we do that, let's get legal.
Legal.
What, Drake?
Legal.
Ah, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, the radio home of the Golden State Warriors. You're back-to-back champs! And when we talk about the Lakers, yesterday I brought up a bunch of stats about the Warriors and the Lakers and their history. The Lakers have beaten the Warriors. It's like 251 to 165. And then in the playoffs, the Warriors and Lakers have met seven times. Seven times. And the Lakers are 6-1. Oh, I want them so bad in the playoffs. I want them so bad. If you're Snoop, okay, Snoop Dogg, who's one of the biggest flip-floppers in sports history, he'll wear like a Steeler uniform one day, then he's a Cowboy fan. He was at Warrior games. I was like, Snoop, you're not a Warrior fan. You've never been a Warrior. Why are you courtside wearing a Warrior jersey? Where's he going to have his allegiance to, guys? You know he's going to be with LeBron, right? Right? What about Beyonce and Jay-Z? They're going to be siding with us? They're going to be with LeBron? I don't know. Be interesting. Be very, very interesting. And then, you know, Anthony Slater and I discussed it. The Warriors, their passing statistics are down this year. They're about 15 passes per game less effective, meaning they're not kicking the ball around. Guys are chucking. And we all know Clay has been chucking. He leads the team in attempts, and he leads the team in YOLO shots right now. I mean, that is no doubt about it. I'm concerned about the second unit, though. If we really want to dig deeper, it's the second unit. And, you know, young Gabe, the producer, and I, we've been kicking around some ideas. And I said to him, I said, you know, hypothetically, they could really use a player like J.R. Smith. And he said, oh, my God, your neck snapped back. And I said, dude, if you really take a step back, remove the emotion. Hey, J.R. Smith wants to get back at LeBron. So right already off the gate, you know I'm all about that. Number two. The Warriors have this thing, this elixir, where they make fools look like gold. Nick Young, anyone? I couldn't stand it all year. He did have a pretty big game against Houston down the stretch when we needed him. Hit a couple of wide open buckets. About time. I mean, Jesus, 7 billion articles written about him, one big shot, you know? This is like totally disproportionate. But if you look at what JR can do, off the bench, shooting guard, can play a little small forward, can handle the ball a little. Yes, he's making 18 point something million, but I'd be willing to part with a combination of players, Livingston, Bell, first round picks, whatever, to get someone like that. You need some scoring in that second unit. And that's something that if you watch the games a lot, Clay plays with a lot of the scrubs and a lot of the second unit guys because they don't really have a traditional backup two guard. And with McCaw not coming back this year, with Jacob Evans just not being ready, they don't really have a number two. And Quinn Cook, I like Quinn Cook a lot. I really like Quinn Cook a lot. He's taking a step back. He's taking a step back. And who's the guy? What's Damian Lee, right? Is that Steph's brother-in-law? He had about a week where I was like, wow. And then crickets. Alphonso McKinney missed time. He kind of came back to earth. I think he's still rounding out. He's more of a three than a two. I mean, in my book, I think he's a little, he's not, he can't handle the ball.